Like to call to order the meeting of the Oceana Community Service District, regular meeting for Wednesday, May 24th at 5:30 PM. Could you please call the roll? Madam Secretary.
Director Burnett.
Here.
Director Angelo. Director Colwell.
Here.
Vice President Austin.
Here.
President White.
Here. Please rise for the flag salute. Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, back to the agenda review. Has anybody got any changes, additions? Okay. Did we get some action on that?
Nope.
No?
Doing a motion. I make a motion that we approve the agenda as presented.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5-0, or 4-0 with one absent. Okay, we'll move on to closed session. And Attorney Minery, would you go ahead?
Yes. For the record, I'll note that there is no public, making public comment. So public comment would have been available had public been here for this. Pursuant to Government Code 54956.9D2, conference with district legal counsel regarding anticipation of litigation, there is one case.
Thank you. During the closed session? Call the meeting back to order, the Oceana Community Service District Board of Directors, regular meeting of May 24th at 6 PM. I believe we need a report from our closed session.
Yep, the report out of closed session is no reportable action for item 5A.
Thank you. Now call for public comment for items that are not on the agenda.
I have a question regarding closed session. So I don't know, is that proper?
Come forward, yeah.
My question is, who are the parties involved?
I believe that's...
Sorry. When we have an item on closed session pursuant to this government code for anticipated litigation, we're not obligated to disclose the names of the parties. In fact, I would recommend to the board that we do not disclose the names of the parties as it may impact our positions and legal strategy.
Thank you.
Jeff, maybe you can do a quick contrast to if we have a claim that we've received.
Yes. Anticipated litigation is when the board is concerned about potential litigation, either commencing litigation against another party, or there has been some sort of a threat of litigation against the district, and it allows the district to meet in closed session to discuss the material facts and circumstances and legal strategy related to those allegations. In contrast, what Mr. Ogren has pointed out, sometimes the board will receive claims pursuant to the Tort Claims Act, which is a precursor to filing a lawsuit against the district. Various reasons for submitting a claim, and your board is familiar with those. We receive usually at least one a year. When the board receives a claim, we don't specifically identify the name of the claimant on the agenda pursuant to privacy reasons and just as is required following what the government code requires. However, when we do receive a claim, the claim will be made available at the meeting for public review if members of the public would like to arrive and view the claim prior to going to closed session. And that's really the only difference.
And just an answer to the question. When you're required to state the name of the litigant, it gives one half of the answer, not the whole answer.
Well, would you like me to clarify that, President White?
If you can, very briefly.
Very briefly, there is no litigant in when we are addressing issues of anticipated litigation. When a claim is made, we will identify the claimant, but we have no claim pursuant to the Tort Claims Act.
Thank you. Calling for any other public comment?
Thank you.
Seeing nobody come forward, move on to special presentations and reports. Field Supervisor Tony Maricino, I'll get it right for a change.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino. All right, so we had 8 work orders, 14 USAs, 6 customer service calls. We had 2 after-hours call-outs. One of them was for unlocks for no payment, but they paid and we unlocked them after hours. The other one was the lift station went down 2 Saturdays ago due to a power outage on that side of the beach. And it was out for quite some time till about, 1:30, 2 o'clock, my understanding. We had meter reads last week. Rereads, high, lows, notifications for leaks. We had trash postings last week also. Continuing on sewer jetting. And the Five Cities Fire Authority, when they promote somebody new, their policy is to actually meet with the different water agencies that they fight fires on and kind of get an understanding of the locations of our system that are a little better than others, maybe some areas that are not so good to pull from a certain hydrant wharf head. And then they actually come out and tour our facility to get an understanding of how everything works and why there may be a delay in water. They start pumping right away, a little delay for the boosters to catch up and everything. So that, which, I really like that they're, getting a little bit more interested in the areas that they're fighting fires and have a better understanding of their areas and different water systems. So that was really good to meet with them. And then Lopez is currently at 62%, which is 30,602 acre feet.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Any questions from the board? Thank you.
Thank you.
There's really no report from the Five Cities Fire Authority, and so let's move on to General Manager.
I have nothing to report other than the agenda items that we have.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. See nobody from the Sheriff's Office. Move on to board reports.
I can go?
Yeah.
I do have a committee that I attended last week, and that was the Zone 3 Advisory Committee. And that was on Thursday, May 18th. And it was in the Pismo chambers. So, and I always like how Director Caldwell kind of briefly gives what the zone, what the committee is. So the Zone 3 is the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. That mainly has the agencies within Five Cities as well as Avila Beach, mostly in regard to Lopez Lake and the water plant that's there. So. Our field supervisor gave an update that Lopez is still at the 62%. And we're going to be talking actually later in this meeting about the budget and going into detail on that, so I'll hold off there. One item before the action item that the board, that the committee took last week, that the current projected evaporation for this water year is actually 4,000 acre feet. And those that were on the advisory committee, we all were shocked by that, just because that's such a high number, especially going from what we've seen over the past number of years, how low Lopez has been. And that really also factored into the action item, which is the LRP, the Low Reservoir Response Plan, which has been in place for 2 years. and it has two triggers. One is when the lake drops below 20,000 acre feet, as well as when the county declares a drought emergency. And so both of those triggers have been into effect for the past 2 years. However, now the lake is above 30,000 acre feet, and as yesterday, the Board of Supervisors took whether they were going to release the county from the drought emergency. So at the advisory committee, we discussed whether or not, as the committee, all the agencies here, wanted to make the recommendation to the Board of Supervisors to continue the LLRP. And that has different impacts for the different agencies that are around here, some a little bit more positively, others a little bit more negatively. But the one thing that I found to be really exciting was that it was unanimous. All agencies wanted to see the LLRP remain in place. And that it was an encouraging sign, because we all have been a part of the rough state when regards to this drought. And all the communities around here have taken a number of different steps in order to conserve as much as possible. So yes, the Governor Brown had said for the state of California, drought's lifted, but we were concerned that, we don't know what the groundwater levels are. We'll hopefully have a better idea in the fall, as well as whether or not this winter will be a wet winter or dry winter. So the entire committee voted to make the recommendation. The recommendation was from also the technical advisory committee. I can also say to our wonderful general manager, helped out a lot in crafting the letter to really state the case of going to the Board of Supervisors to really say, the LRP really does need to remain in effect. So I can say too, and a big thank you to our President White, as well as our Vice President Austin, and our legal counsel Jeff. They all were in attendance yesterday at the Board of Supervisors and gave a great public comment about why this needs to remain in effect. And although the Board of Supervisors did lift the drought emergency, and it was a little hazy to me, but yes, they were willing to keep the LRP in place. That's going to stay in place, as well as the surplus water that's there. So nothing will change. So that was exciting for all of us, because one thing that I've said the past couple of meetings at the advisory committee is that although we have to maintain our interests for our individual agencies, we're all neighbors right here, and we all need to do what we can to help one another. And I had stated that very thing too at the committee last week. Received very well. Same sentiments to among the other agencies there too. So excited for the LRP to remain in effect, and hopefully we'll have good groundwater levels at the end of this year, as well as another wet winter. But I think that sums up my committee report.
Thank you. I'll just add to that I felt the Board of Supervisors was very sensitive to what we were saying, was really listening and actually responded positively. I think I looked him in the eye and said we'd only pumped 0.5% out of the groundwater, and it kind of, I heard somebody go, huh? So I think they recognized that the South County is making an effort to ensure that we have water for the future.
Director Caldwell?
I just have a very brief. I attended the Planning Commission, the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission meeting on May 11, and my basic purpose for being there was to attempt to convince them that we desperately need an update to the 2004 resource capacity study, and whether we get that or not, we don't know, but at least we do know there's more current information than 2004, and hopefully we do get that. I would be remiss if I did not echo Director Bernays' kudos to President White and Vice President Austin, as well as Mr. Menry, for their attendance and effectiveness at the Board of Supervisors meeting. Well done.
Thank you. Okay, public comment on the items discussed.
I'm going to throw this out now just because you folks were talking about water, and it's great to hear that position. You know, preserving the water and giving the water table time to recharge itself. And this is not directly on point, but it goes back to water sales that occurred between 2010 up to now. There were agendas that discussed closed session items that, again, didn't list party names, but in general, they said it was related to the big water litigation. Do you remember the name of that? Does somebody remember the name of it, the big one, where they had a record of all the water litigators involved in Santa Clara County Superior
Court? I'm not sure that the comments are pertaining to the board and reports at this time.
The point that I want to make is I'd like eventually to see a record of any water sales that occurred, because the public was not made aware of it due to the fact that even when people were in litigation, the parties were not named in the agendas.
You'd have to,
And I have made records requests over the years that haven't been answered.
Okay, thank you. Okay, moving on to consent agenda. Any issues? I will say I was very happy to see that we have four fireworks applicants, and we have four slots, and that makes me happy. I didn't have to decide.
And Madam President, my only real brief comment is that you'll see on accounts payable, we have modified the reports. On our disbursement list, we're printing a different report. It's more concise. It shows the payees and the check numbers. If in the event that your board pulls a particular item and decides that there it shouldn't be paid, then we would void that check. But this different approach, and all the invoices are always available for public review at the counter, you know, either board members or the public. But we're implementing it for two reasons. One is the report that shows disbursements is more concise. The other one had a lot more details, including accounting codes, which you're really not technically approving right now. You're approving the disbursements. And the second reason is that by having the check numbers in there, it will improve our internal controls on all the checks that we hold. So if we void checks, those will also, in fact, I think there's one that's on that list that shows a voided check. And that way, when we're audited every year, we can show that we've got a control on all the checks that were used and held by the district, and that every single check ends up showing up on your agenda as either a disbursement or a voided check. We also modified the payroll to be more consistent with the actual cash disbursements with payroll, net pay, and then, of course, amount withheld from employees for employees, you know, taxes and other types of deductions, and then show the actual payments to CalPERS and federal and state taxes. And so we've modified that as well to better reflect the actual cash disbursements that we're making.
Thank you. Is there any questions? More questions from the board? No questions. Entertain a motion.
Public comment.
No comment. Oh, public comment. There's two boxes. I was going to see if anyone else wanted to make a comment. Any public comment? No. Giselle, please give your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Giselle Naylor. I'm an Oceano resident. The question that I had is, when checks get paid out and a warrant is required, is it possible to match up the checks with the warrants that authorize payment, say to a contractor? You guys mentioned payroll, but I'm talking about warrants and checks matching up.
So all the support for every check, a warrant and a check, go by the same name.
Yeah.
But all the invoices that match up to each check are available for public review. And as soon as we process it, anybody can come to the counter and we can make it immediately available.
Thank you. Thank you. So, yeah.
Well, then I'll make a motion that we approve the items A, B, and C, D on the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
Motion's been made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 4-0, 1 absent. Thank you. Move on to business items. I should read it. 9A, update on the county's Highway 113 street drainage project. And also authorization for the president to execute a facility use agreement.
You're done. Yeah, you're done.
Okay.
They were here for the fireworks.
Oh, I.
Oh, yes. Approved.
Would have been. Thank you.
Madam President, members of the board, on item number 9A relating to the county's drainage project and related recommendations. So this ends up being a quickly evolving item. In the staff report, I had indicated that on Monday, the county opened up the bids for a project, and that today I would report as to what the district's costs are. If recall, on January 25th, your board approved a utility relocation agreement and had subsequently approved a check in about $109,000 or so to pay for the county, our district share of the county project to move our water and sewer lines to get out of the way of their drainage lines. And legal counsel had reviewed the basis for which the county could force us to move our facilities at our cost when they're doing a project, and that's all standard and has been, you know, well known for a long, long time. We might not like it, but certainly it's a mandate that the county can impose upon us. So the bids came out on Monday, and we were supplemental item number 2. And so we've got bid sheets here for you to review, although I'll kind of give you the highlights anyhow. The first bidder, Burke Construction, bid our work at just over $250,000. And the engineer's estimate was $90,000 plus 10% contingency and some soft costs for inspection and whatnot that we have to pay the county. We paid the county a check $109,000, and Burke Construction's bid for supplemental item number 2, our work, came in at over $250,000. So as you might imagine, I had a relatively large gulp, and the following three contractors, their bid for our work ranged from around $45,000 to $60,000 in rough numbers. And so even the county staff asked the county clerk, who was stating what the bid results were, to make sure that he wrote down the one bid correctly for our work. Well, at that time, I wasn't too worried about it because there was two bidders whose base bids for the county works were lower than Burke's. So, you know, I wasn't looking at the Burke Construction bid. The way that it works is the county would award the work to whoever had the lowest bid for the county's base project. And so two others had come in under Burke's base bid, and I was relieved because then it meant we were going, our work was either going to cost somewhere between $45,000 and $60,000. far less than what we had already paid the county. So that was good news, and I sighed some relief. But the county staff told me, well, the problem was is all the bids for their work were in excess of $3.5 million, and their engineer's estimate was only about $2.1 million. So the work for the county's efforts, the bids came in at about almost $1.5 million more than what they had anticipated. And that's obviously a very large difference between the engineer's estimate and what the bids came in. And also, all four bids for the county work were relatively consistent with each other, which indicates that the contractors probably were pretty diligent in figuring out the base bid. The only one bid that was sort of out there was for our item by the one contractor.
Do you know why? I mean, do they ask why such a situation?
No. So what happens is when bids are reviewed, there's a strict adherence to the public contracts code as to what you can and can't do. Now, there is some basis in which counties can reject bids, but in our utility relocation agreement with the county, we don't have the right to reject the base bid. That's a sole determination of the county. So we're kind of stuck in this bit of a risk situation. But again, I walked out of the room because I saw that the one contractor who was quoting a big price for us was the third lowest. So the other two would have to have some problems, and I felt very comfortable. Well, in the morning, I found out that those other two lower ones had math problems in their bid. And so that's one of the procedures that a public agency will go through, one of many procedures. Other examples real quick are like verifying bonding requirements, verifying insurance, a number of different things to confirm that the bidders are responsive to the bid document that the county put out.
Yeah.
Well, when they found math errors in the bids on two other contractors, they automatically changed the math then, correct the math, modify the bids, and lo and behold, what happened is that contractor that I was worried about is now the lowest bid. What we also have in front of us, though, is the correspondence from the county that they're going to reject all bids because they just don't have the funding right now to cover that $1.5 million gap. So we got the correspondence from their...
Can you look into why their estimate, their base was so much lower than...
I haven't studied it, but in the bids, we would be able to... You can go through and you can pick out where the engineer was estimating on the various bid items versus the contractors came in. And from there, then, you can start evaluating why there was such a big difference. And I imagine that the county and their engineer are starting to already look at that. But the message we got, and then I called Dave Flynn, who's deputy director in Public Works, and essentially he runs the transportation efforts, and got the verbal confirmation again, in addition to the written one, that they just simply have to reject all bids. He estimated it might be about 6 months before they can go back out to bid again. What they have to do is they have to try to get some grant monies. With the passage of the gas tax, they think that there might be something available there. The other thing that they have to do, and one thing we might be able to help them with, because of course, even though the drainage project is a county Caltrans project, it has a direct effect on Oceano, is the idea that when the county first got into the joint project with Caltrans, it was generally recognized that this is a Caltrans project. It's a Caltrans responsibility and it's Highway 1. And at that point in time, I was the director of Public Works, and part of my support for it was under the premise that, okay, the county can implement it. It's a project that's more like what the counties will implement and less than what, you know, it's not a freeway and the other things that Caltrans typically implements. But it was based on a certain premise that Caltrans was going to provide some significant funding for this, that the county's funding was not going to be as large, that we were going to help implement the project. So I talked to Dave Flynn about that again today, and he, you know, generally stated that they will also be turning around to Caltrans in order to try to cover this funding gap. I think it would be advisable for us to work with State Representative Mr. Cunningham in order to get him up to speed on it, and so that he can make his contacts at Caltrans and talk about how important of a project this is for Oceano, and how Caltrans should really step up and help provide funding to cover that funding gap. In addition, I think it would probably be good for me and the president to craft a letter to the Board of Supervisors supporting the rejection of all bids. And both of those actions, I don't think, need any formal direction from your board. It's just something that we can go and do, because the rejection of the bids is important for the standpoint of, otherwise we would be on the hook for some money that's far in excess of what anybody really thinks that work should cost. Also, in January, your board authorized me to independently get bids for our work and to potentially construct it separate from the county. And I want to be real clear that it was an authorization as opposed to direction. And so when I craft recommendations, and if it's to authorize something, then that means that it's still in whomever gets authorized, it's still in their judgment as to whether or not they pursue it. If your board directs me or each other to do something, then it's the board's judgment that it shall be done. So after that meeting in January, I was looking at the complications of getting a separate Caltrans permit for our work, the timing requirement, and in fact, in the county's agreement, it says we would have to have the work done by May 31st, which is about 6 days from now, right? It says that we can develop a different timeline subject to the Public Works Director's approval, but the complications of multiple contractors going out there and getting a Caltrans permit for work and everything else, I was like, well, I didn't see it as being feasible. There's also some risks associated with construction in terms of, if we modify our lines and we don't get it right, then the county's contractor comes through and has to modify it. So those are called vertical controls, exactly where are the pipes sitting in terms of top to each other. So it would have been a challenging project. And then I'm sitting there thinking, okay, well, what's the risk that we're going to get a bid way out there like we got? And then we got it. And so, you know, again, I had that gulp in my throat. But the fact that all of the work in the county's base bid was so high, again, gives us the opportunity and the opportunity to now go ahead and do that work in front of the county, because if they're going to be, you know, delayed by about 6 months. So I am going to start to, and all the plans and specs have already been approved. Your board has adopted the Uniform Cost Construction Accounting Act, so it falls within the informal bid procedures. We need to do our environmental clearance. I talked to Dave Flynn, and he's going to provide us with the Caltrans encroachment permit that they obtained, and so that way we can look at it and see what component of the work is our work, and it will help expedite our efforts with Caltrans to get a permit. It's also going to be a good experience because we have some other improvements along Highway 1 where we need to start thinking about replacing some old 2-inch pipes that are at risk. And so going through this process of getting the Caltrans encroachment permit on this project is going to help some other future work efforts. And so obviously I can start getting that all together. I'll have to come back to your board to, you know, before any final action is taken. And even if we got bids there that were strange, we could reject all bids. I do want to make sure in a final statement on this is that in the supplemental bid items from the county where the range was like $45,000 to $60,000, you know, part of going out there and getting informal bids right now is to try to get one of those contractors who's looked at the work and who's given reasonable estimates to get them on the job and get the job done. We can't expect our bid, though, to be in the $45,000 to $60,000 range, because to do it as a singular project, the contractor is going to have a flagging and traffic control and some other types of costs that were really folded into the bigger project. So, you know, my general guesstimate in talking with Dave Flynn is we think it's probably would be in the range of $75,000 plus or minus, but we'll just see what they come in at. But We can't expect that they'll be in the $45,000 to $60,000, because the economy of scale of joining it with a county project isn't going to be there. But it'll eliminate the risk of when the county does go back out to bid, that you know, some sort of anomaly in the bidding. Now, I did speak to the idea that we don't have the ability to challenge the bids, but what does happen in addition to the math that public agencies will do in checking insurance and checking other types of provisions, there's also things called imbalanced bids, where sometimes contractors will weight certain bid items higher and other bid items lower. For example, if there's a lot of soil to be moved in a project, and let's say the public agency estimates there's got to be 10,000 cubic yards of soil that needs to be moved, and the contractor is looking at the job and thinking the amount of soil that's going to be moved is going to be double that. Well, the public agency still has to pay on the quantity. So sometimes if a contractor sees that they think that the soils estimate is, they might bump up that unit price a little bit and then save on another one, or bump down another one. If there's always some ability to do that, but if something is blatantly imbalanced, then the argument is you can potentially reject that bid. I can't draw any conclusions in this situation, but it's one of those that jumps out at you that says, okay, somebody got the low bid, but some of the supplemental work was bidded really high. And did somebody bring down their base bid and push costs into supplemental as a way of getting the low bid? That's an example of how an imbalanced bid could work. Again, based on the utility relocation agreement with the county, though, we can't challenge bids. So I think I've said it a few times, fortunate that all the bids are being rejected by the county, and I think we just want to reinforce that we support that position with the Board of Supervisors. And
question.
Sure.
Is there any way to go back and actually look at that bid?
It's here. This is all that there is to look at, is what's in front of you. The details behind how a contractor develops those bids is somewhat of their own proprietary information. What happens in public contracting code is the contractor provides a basis for their bid in a sealed envelope, and sometimes we call them a black box, and they get put in sometimes safe deposit box with two different keys, one with the public agency and one with the contractor. And it's only really opened up in the event that there's claims at the end of the job and there's disputes as to what fair compensation is, because then at that point in time, the public agency does have the ability to say, well, if you're saying that I owe you more money, then I have a right to see what the basis of your bid was. But that's pretty much it. Other than that, if there's imbalance bids or other bidding irregularities, the public agency is obligated to do that evaluation based on the documents that were provided as part of the bidding and everything.
And there would be no way for us to challenge the possible imbalance of this bid, where monies were or bids were pumped up on the supplemental?
Yeah, we do not have that ability. We're specifically excluded in our utility relocation, because our option is to separately do the work.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the update on the project. With respect to the recommendation on a facility use agreement, the county approached us and said, you know, do you have office space or whatever? And what they've pretty close to come to the conclusion is they just want to put a construction trailer on the parking lot. We've got plenty of space. They'd have to work in some wiring. I asked them that their property managers give us a proposal in terms of rental, since they have a number of property managers at the county who work on that kind of stuff. My recommendation is still to authorize the president to sign such an agreement, since it's on the agenda, and it might be 6 months before we work on it, but
get it done here.
Approximately how long does the project last?
I don't remember what the duration was. I would think it would be longer. They've got a lot of drain pipe to put in and stuff, so.
Yeah.
If they go back out to bid, you know, 6 months from now, bid results won't come in until after the first of the year. They'll time the work sometime after April 15th. So.
Don't they have that, the other end of the flood thing? Don't they have that drainage, trash, whatever it is, down by the airport? Isn't that part of it too?
Yes.
So that'll make it more than 6 weeks, I would think.
Yeah, so they've got some pretty significant drain pipes, what's called jack and boring underneath the railroad tracks, because you don't trench, you know, you've got to push pipes through underground. So those operations take a little bit of time. And then they've got now down by the airport in Delta Court where they're moving. In some ways, I think about it as Highway 1 and 13th Street, you know, accumulates a lot of water right there. And the idea is the design pushes that water over to Delta Court. The best way to characterize their project is that it won't eliminate flooding. We're in too low a lying of an area. Certain storm events will occur, high tides, storm surges, big rainfall, won't eliminate the flooding at 13th Street and Highway 1. But the objective is to reduce the severity and reduce the frequency of flooding. And that, you know, time will tell how well it does there. And, you know, for all practical purposes, it should help with a lot of the flooding events. But again, the big ones that come through, we'll still see flooding at Highway 1 and 13. Reducing the frequency, reducing the severity is the objectives of that project.
Another question, just while we're discussing it. This to me looks like that it's possible that the Air Park Bridge and the 13th and Highway 1 projects could almost be done at the same time. Is that a possibility?
It is a possibility because now we're looking at the same construction window. Yeah, I would tend to think that if they can close the funding gap in the next 6 months like they hope to and get out to bid, they would be looking at doing the drainage project as early in the construction season as they can. And maybe Air Park Drive Bridge is going to be a little bit later, because Air Park Drive Bridge, for all anticipated purposes, is going to go through two construction seasons that, you know, they'll have to deal with one in winter. But
yeah,
that I'm not even sure about. So, okay, so the idea is maybe they are going on at the same time. That's within the realm of possibilities too. I think the two projects are far enough apart where, you know, for traffic flow and everything, they should not.
Thinking more of the impact to our agency.
Oh.
Because we have to move utilities there. We're involved in utilities here.
So, you know, we can get out in front and get our work done on the Highway 13th Street project well in advance of the county doing anything. On Air Park Drive, it's just not real feasible to see us doing a separate contract there, because during the construction period, because, you know, when you're taking down a bridge and we have a sewer line that goes through there, that's all just got to be done. You know, you can't really have two contractors in the same
Working at the same place at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah. On Air Park Drive, when we go to rebuild the water line, we might be able to use a separate contractor on that.
Yeah.
But during the construction period, it's really all got to be controlled by the county, and our cost estimates on that are extremely low.
I was just thinking of the actual work involved. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
So we should be fine.
I entertain a motion if there's no more public comment. Public comment.
A lot of red flags go up for me when I hear this. As a homeowner, I want to know who's going to be responsible for moving my water, my sewer lines. If somebody's going to be boring to put pipes through to replace those water and sewer lines, who's going to be liable if there's something wrong? The state, if I knew nothing, the first people I would go to is the Department of General Services at the state, because they have such intense regulation, everything that has to be set out in a contract, whereas the Community Services District doesn't. The county has less obligation. I would model any contract, any obligation under what the state does. I would use them as an example to follow. But as a homeowner, I need more information. I would, whatever you're being asked to sign tonight, it can wait a week for you to answer your own questions that you have if a project is not going to get started until next year. My experience with the Department of Public Works is having them do work in the street that they did not pull permits for and they did not get authorization for in Oceano, and then try and obscure that fact. And it took me years to find out exactly who did what and, you know, what were they doing in the street. So, you know, you've got property on really valuable, potentially valuable land that everybody wants a piece of. Make sure that the property owners that are here are protected. There are too many facts being thrown at you at once in this meeting tonight. Wait a week. Don't sign anything until you do, till you have your own questions answered. And as a property owner, I know nothing about this. Maybe I haven't kept up, but there's more. And especially on the bids, you should have access to every cent that you are liable to pay out on. Where's the money going? Double check your materials. Are the materials you're paying for actually the materials that go into the ground?
Thank you. Entertain a motion on the facilities authorization for the president to execute a facilities use agreement.
I move that our board authorize our president to negotiate and execute the facility use permit with the county.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 4-0 with one absent. Okay, I move on to 9B, discussion of a draft job description for a part-time solid waste coordinator.
Madam President, members of the board, this is a no action item. Feedback is certainly appropriate. What is in front of you is a draft jobs description in order to implement and to have resources for, you know, working on the garbage and solid waste issues that we have in the community. Cody Grable, who was our professional intern, helped us set up some policies and other programs in order to be effective with them. We really do need the resources to follow up. And the job description provides a number of examples of the individual working with community-based organizations, public education, doing the enforcement that's necessary. One of the things that I want to make sure we do in the future, a little bit differently than in the past, is that if there is a stroller that's thrown in the alleyway, then just pick up the stroller and throw it in the back of the pickup truck. So there's always a balance there between having to take enforcement actions and reminding property owners that they have a responsibility to keep things clean. But you also have the little things that, you know, you just need to take care of. So the job description, I looked at a couple of different, you know, agencies, Santa Maria, the County of San Luis Obispo, our own job descriptions, and tailored the one that's on your agenda package. And then after I did it, I should also say that I talked with our SEIU Local 620 representative, because whenever we have new job descriptions, we always want to review them with the union. But the idea of taking this job description and then further modifying it so that the individual can also fill the duties of a utility sister operator trainee. And the benefit there then is if Tony and Jason and Casey need that extra helping hand on something, they've got the ability to, you know, get that extra helping hand. The idea that maybe the person ends up deciding they love being a water and wastewater operator and they want to pursue, you know, getting their license in that. So making sure to provide, you know, an open door on that type of thing. So that's the direction that I, you know, unless your board doesn't like that idea, I would then work on some other modifications to incorporate some of those duties in there. In the board letter, I also identified potential salary ranges. And what I did is our salary ranges for the utilities operator 1, 2, and 3 has 7.5% differentials. So a utilities operator 2 gets paid 7.5% more than a 1, and a 3 gets paid 7.5% more than a 2. And so then if it's a trainee, how I calculated a potential hourly wage for them is to take the utility one and subtract out 7.5%. So at an entry level, that would provide the position with the starting hourly wage of $16.98. And in a general judgment type of thing where we see minimum wage is going to be moving up to $15 an hour in the next few years, it seems like this is pretty appropriate because, you know, we want to be able to attract somebody who can see they can have a possibility of developing some sort of a career, you know, take care of the solid waste needs that we have immediately, the possibility of developing career in utility system operations. And so, again, with minimum wage moving to $15 in the near future, it seemed like a starting hourly of $16.98 would probably be able to help us recruit for the appropriate level of whom we would be looking for. Step 7 I have listed, that's what takes about 5 years to get there. And then our step 8 longevity pay is either at the 9th year or the 10th year of employment. I can't remember. Hopefully by that time they've worked into an operator. The other idea of having a trainee is that if we have a vacancy among one of the operators, then the idea is hopefully we'd have somebody who could step into that role, you know, quicker, and then we would backfill at the solid waste trainee position. With respect to the budget, I included the next year, well, the third quarter actual review, but the including the budget that's been adopted for next year as part of the two-year adoption that occurred in August. And the funding is there already. It doesn't require any, you know, budget adjustments come the budget hearings. On the revenue side, where we project $97,833 in revenues, we actually will have unanticipated revenues with the landfill savings payment. So our revenues next year are going to be closer to $105,000. And so it covers the salary projections. It covers some of the basic costs that we have in solid waste. We still have $15,000 for signage and cans in there. We still have somewhere between $250,000 and $300,000 in reserves. So the garbage fund, the solid waste fund, I want to rename it to the solid waste fund rather than garbage fund. that's more of the common terminology today. So, you know, we don't really need to, the money is there in the budget. If anything, we've had some general discussions about the allocation of admin expenditures, and we're going to be taking that up in the 18-19 budget. But where in solid waste is allocated $47,000 on admin allocations, it begs that number might go down in subsequent years. So again, the position is fundable. Today is only for the purpose of talking conceptually about the job specs, and if the board is generally supportive, again, no action is needed. We would come back and final up the job description and then make sure that's in the position allocation list when the budget is in front of you at the second meeting in June.
I like your working conditions. Field work exposure to natural elements, including rain, wind, and other inclement conditions, traffic and heavy equipment, odors and decaying debris, really makes that job sound desirable, doesn't it?
It's amazing how job specs today are becoming, you know, truth and disclosure job specs almost.
I like your idea of going beyond only a solid waste coordinator. Mm-hmm. I think that's terrific. That's good for the district.
I'm glad that you like that idea. Mm-hmm. The idea is right now it would be a half-time position.
Yeah.
Depending on how workloads and things change in the future, it would require board approval, but it could go to a full-time position where the individual is working, you know, roughly half-time on solid waste and the other half-time in the utility operations. As we move into capital project programs, that might be more feasible at that time as well. As a half-time position, the benefits are limited. They get sick leave underneath state law, but there's no retirement benefits associated with half-time employment. I don't think there's hardly any benefit. It's pretty much hourly, plus they get sick leave. Once we start moving beyond half-time, then I think even at three-quarter time,
32 hours.
They're pretty limited. But so if the idea is it would be strictly right now limited as a half-time position, and that's the basis for both the need. The need for anything more than half-time just doesn't exist right now, as well as its fundability right now is based on a half-time position.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, with all the efforts that we've already done with the solid waste, program, I think, and we haven't had Cody for a little while, so having somebody to be able to come in to really advance those efforts, I think, would be great. And I know we discussed, I think, the idea a few months ago, roughly about, the future of this, and I agree with Director Caldwell, too, and that having flexibility, potentially for this, person, I think would be great, and potentially a little bit of help when needed from operations staff, I think would be great. But, because we have to pinch pennies where we need to, so when we can be flexible and do a couple things, and then that's a great experience for whoever that person would be, too. They get kind of a...
Yeah, I totally agree. It's a, yeah. Everything. What are we doing with the plans for the Adopt a Can and those projects? Would that be a part of what this job would
Yes, because we have to be able to have somebody who can go and knock on the doors of the businesses to talk about the program, and we just simply do not have the time
we've
anybody on staff
so much
to do
already.
That.
I love to see this continue. It was great what Cody was doing, so I'm all for moving forward.
Find another Cody.
Yeah.
I think it's his birthday today.
Oh, really?
We should all share his text number and send him a happy birthday text.
Has there been
on the internet
discussion with state parks about the trash on the pier?
Yes.
Don't we call them? I mean, I do.
Well, we have a contractor lined up to help us out with unusual events. It's a good reminder. We need to give them a call in the next day or so that they're ready to come out on Monday and Tuesday. Yeah, because it's Memorial Day.
Big weekend, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have somebody on call to help with that. And that's really our next effort there.
Does State Parks contribute any money for that?
No. And... um, little bit nervous. We're moving a little bit off topic of the job description. So I'll need to come back and provide an update. We did have good discussions with State Parks, and they're pursuing, because they provide bags for everybody who goes out on the dunes, and it sounded like they can do something that's a little bit more custom for communities, like keep the community. You see a lot of the orange bags that say something about California, and they're looking at different options, so that's more, it's not going to say Oceano, but, you know, keep your community clean, so.
Maybe when we bring this back, we can invite them to come.
Yeah, and again, this is one of the benefits of having somebody on staff who can do this. And so we've had some, you know, basic discussions with State Parks. I felt that those were okay, but we really got to have somebody on board.
And,
you know, to have, if we had a point man on that.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Wonderful. Well, I think we all support it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good job. Yeah.
So even though there's no action, public comment would still be...
Public comment?
Tony Maricino. I didn't realize how good of a job Cody was doing until I did meter reads, and there was debris, trash everywhere in the alleyways, unlike when he was here. It's kind of like your cell phone. You don't say thank you every time it works, but you get upset when it doesn't. He made a big difference, and now the field staff is... You know, spending more time. I had one gentleman or one of the field guys do 8 hours last week. He's gonna do some more time tomorrow. But it does, he really helped us out a lot.
Yeah.
You know, relieving us from that duty. Just want to let you know, he did a great job.
Good.
Thank
great.
You.
In looking over the job description for the draft solid waste coordinator. There's some important things there. Inspecting public rights of way, collects, lifts, disposes of solid waste, coordinates with other district staff to review and revise waste management policies, and be able to read, interpret, and analyze technical data. You're getting into pretty sophisticated educational requirements there. And yet, when you get into, when you're notifying your potential applicant about environmental conditions, there's no specific reference to the fact that gas lines down by the treatment plant down there. During the 2003 earthquake, I spoke to somebody from the gas company, a supervisor who was assessing the damage to the gas lines down there, and he told me, you know, the gas lines down there are not all where they are shown on the maps for the gas company. So keeping that in mind, and all the technical requirements of this job, minimum education, a valid driver's license, no special education requirements exist. One of the requirements should be, if not knowing how to actually create a schematic, it would be knowing how to read one, or knowing how to read a technical draft of what equipment is actually in the ground, what lines are in the ground, and the utilities. That would be a minimum requirement for this job, even though it's true, life experience and work is useful. It's not the only thing. There has to be a certain type of technical training and being able to understand the schematics that describe what's actually in the ground.
Thank you. We don't need any actual action.
Correct.
Okay, let's move on then. Let's talk water. Business item 9C, review the water supply budgets for Lopez and State Water.
Good evening, Madam President and Board. I'm Carrie, your business accounting manager, and we are reviewing the State Water budget for Lopez and oh, sorry, the water supply budgets for Lopez and the state water. So we put together a presentation on PowerPoint, and there's a copy of it here for you, and also a copy of the state water project. There's a full map with all on the 11 by 17. So this item is to discuss our water supply budget as a preview to our 17-18 budget. Included in your agenda packages were the following attachments: the state water project cost analysis diagram, our third quarter budget review for water expenditures only, the quarter or the zone 3 Lopez contract related cost provisions, the state water project contract cost provisions, and there are two agreements, both with the county. One is the water supply agreement, which incorporates by reference the county agreement with the State Department of Water, or DWR, and the water treatment agreement, which incorporates the county agreement with the Central Coast Water Authority. Also, we attached the flood control for district zone 3 proposed budget for 17-18 provided by the county, and that was attached to your agenda. So our presentation today will cover a couple questions. One are the types of cost we pay, how much we pay, the budget estimates, how costs affect water supply decisions, for example, what sources we will use at any given time or differences in year, and how the costs affect our water rate from year to year. So this slide and the next couple will illustrate the detailed nature of the cost allocations included in the state water and Lopez contracts. Our groundwater is a bit more simple. We have costs associated with the adjudication, basically some relatively minor legal costs and some groundwater management costs. There are pumping costs that we also incur when we use groundwater. Detailed cost allocations have been developed for both projects since they support multi-agency supplies, and the details help to develop equitable cost sharing at the best possible rate. State water is more detailed because there are many more facilities and a lot more users. In comparison, Lopez is a simpler system with a lot less users. As we will show in later slides, we are focused on the fixed costs versus the variable costs. Both are important to know for budgeting purposes. Variable costs are more important when it comes to deciding which supply to use at a particular point in time. So this illustrates the details of the state water costs. Getting into all these details would be more of an upper division finance course, similar to that leadership course we went to in finance. So we won't go too deep. But the highlights are that we have three different colors on this chart. And they are red, brown, and green, because there are three different agencies that incur costs to deliver state water to Oceano. The brown are from DWR. The red are from the County of San Luis Obispo, and the green are from CCWA.
And DWR is Department of Water Resources?
Yes. Yes, and CCWA is Central Coast Water Authority. So the blue box at the bottom, the blue boxes at the bottom, identifies some major factors. One is the net present value, which is a bit complicated, but essentially it reflects the fact that the contracts expire in 2035, and everything has to be paid in full by that time. So for example, DWR can amortize certain costs, and like major maintenance over time, but not beyond 2035. Then there are reaches, the second blue box. This identifies where an agency is on the DWR pipeline that's illustrated on the big state of California pipeline map we have. So each agency only pays for the infrastructure that reaches to deliver them water. So Oceano does not pay for infrastructure to Los Angeles past the coastal branch, which is near Santanella, and that is on the Highway 5 heading towards Sacramento. So the contract amounts are the third blue box. And these details are after reaches and the NPV and are determined based on our water allocations only. So that is the summary of state water. So the next is our Lopez. And to our agenda, we attached the Zone 3 proposed budget. So as you can note, that is a large document they provided each year to us. And I don't know if Director Colwell, the new standing chair of the Water State Water Contractors Committee, I don't know if you want to bring that to them and ask for something similar. I don't know.
Maybe.
But so Pavo gave me a breakdown of how Lopez works. And for Lopez, all costs are incurred by the county. And the county owns and operates the system. So historically, there's been more scrutiny on the county's operations. For state water, there's a vast majority of costs are incurred by DWR and CCWA. And the county simply passes those costs on to us. The idea of recommending a higher level of detail for state water is based on the fact that the costs are changing. Some of the CCWA debt costs will be paid off in the next couple years and will provide savings to us. Meanwhile, other costs are going to go up. For example, the cost of managing the supply in the Sacramento Delta. What will it take to fix costs like in Lake Oroville? Those kind of things in a state water budget would be nice to see, similar to the one that Lopez gives us. But back to the Zone 3 budget, it illustrates the details of the various cost components and provides comparisons from year to year, so we can see those changes. It also includes the cost that we pay to Zones 3 to wheel state water through Zone 3's system to Oceano. So how much do we pay? This slide shows the current budget and the third quarter budget estimate that we will have $114,000 savings in state water for the current year. Together, it illustrates that we have over $1.5 million budgeted for next year for Lopez and state water combined. And since Lopez is basically a fixed cost, the budgeted worksheets show that our Lopez supply costs are tracking consistently with the budget. So then, the 17-18 budget has been summarized into a pie chart to illustrate the cost that are required for the purchase and pumping of water. This shows that two-thirds of our budget is dedicated to our water supply. The various colors of blue illustrate Lopez, state water, NCMA costs, and utilities related to pumping our groundwater. State water is the highest cost, since we have 750 acre foot per year allocated plus our drought buffer. Lopez is the next highest with a 303 acre feet per year allocation. The groundwater is the least expensive because the wells are paid off and our costs only relate to NCMA and pumping costs.
I'm sorry, what was the Lopez per year?
Lopez,
three.
Yeah.
Three?
It's, yeah.
303.
It's 303 acre per year. And then state water would be 750. So the big point here is that two-thirds of the budget is for our sources of supply, which is why Oceano may be the most drought-resistant community in all of San Luis Obispo County. So this pie only illustrates water costs. This is showing fixed costs versus variable costs and why we have a savings in our third quarter budget review. State water is blue. The dark blue are our fixed costs. The light blue are our variable costs. If we don't take delivery from state water, we don't incur the light blue costs, and there's our savings. Lopez is the green. And whether we take deliveries or not, the cost is essentially the same. From a variable cost perspective, it is our cheapest to deliver, the Lopez. The Board of Supervisors action yesterday, allowing us to use the Lopez water we saved during the drought, will help generate cost savings this year by reducing groundwater pumping and or our delivery of state water. Hopefully we will incur no state water variable costs next year and benefit from some significant savings. We fully budget those costs, and in doing so, this helps us establish with some overall contingencies in the water fund budget. The red up top is the groundwater, and if we pump heavily, we would go over our utilities budget. But again, it would be paid off in our savings in state water. So lastly, we wanted to briefly cover some of the points on our water rates. The district's water rate ordinance provides an increase based on CPI. So in 2016, it was 2.556, and in 17 this year, it is 2.395. The ordinance also provides for increases in the Lopez rate and the tiered rates based on increases in water costs. The Lopez increase was 1.79% in 2016 and 0.615% in 2017. The state water increase was zero for both years, and we have a 5-year maximum on the automatic rate adjustment for all of our rates with that ordinance.
And as a quick clarification on the Lopez, when we see the 1.79% and the 0.61%, that meant that our Lopez costs from the county were that percentage higher than our CPI adjustment. So in 2016, the Lopez bills went up 2.556% plus 1.79. So that worked out to just under a 4.5% increase in Lopez charges. And in 2017, it was almost exactly a 3% increase. So those adjustments, first, all the rates adjust based on inflation for CPI, and then the additional increase for our purchase of water is only to the extent that the cost of the water is greater than the CPI adjustment. On state water, we exclude really the variable cost analysis in there because that's more of a discretionary decision. And when we set the rates in 2015, the state water numbers we were looking at that time were higher. And I just don't see us in that 5-year period increasing state water anything. You know, it's 0% in the first 2 years, and I think it'll be 0% for the next 3 years as well. And the only other thing I want to mention on the water rates is that those details of how we make those modifications will come up when your board considers the agenda items of how to transition from the drought emergency rates to the post-drought rates, because the CPI adjustments and the water rate adjustments affect both rate schedules. One thing we have to do is we notify all of our customers and we send it out with the bills every year. These adjustments that are structured into the ordinance. And so Celia, it was in the March bills that we sent out the notification for the 2017 adjustment, right? Yeah. So we are required to do a notification at least 30 days prior to when they go into effect, and so we do that. But again, we'll be discussing it in greater detail when we look at that transition from the current rates to the post-drought rates.
Are we bound by the county's evaluation of drought or no drought or severity?
There's no county-imposed drought response requirements. You know, the county really doesn't have jurisdiction over your board. The governor does, and so the governor and the State Water Board were the ones that were adopting the statewide efforts. The county is then, that role is specifically going back to Lopez operations and the low reservoir response plan.
Okay.
The thing that I like about the county actions yesterday was that when the governor terminated the drought emergency on a statewide basis, the governor still directed that four counties continue drought response actions. Essentially, that's what we pled to the Board of Supervisors, that even though you're going to be lifting the county-wide drought emergency proclamation, that to continue drought response actions within Zone 3, and primarily so that we minimize our groundwater pumping, because even though the lake's been coming back up, we have to see how is the groundwater basin going to respond to the rainfall. And it has responded. I think Ben Fine may, from Pismo Beach, may have provided some good illustrations to the Board of Supervisors yesterday. The ones that he had intended to show, at least, had showed that there was some pretty good response in groundwater levels coming up in this, you know, because of the rainy season. However, when you look at it over a multi-year period, it still shows that the basin has been depleted. You know, the trend line is still down. And that makes sense because we've had something like 10 out of 12 dry years or 11 out of 13 dry years. So 2010 was a wet year. This last year was a wet year. But if we get another string of four or five dry years in there, you know, it's going to be a challenge. So trying to minimize groundwater pumping and is hopefully will help with the recovery of the basin. So that's the drought response action, is continuation of the LRRP that's that, you know, is important with our relationship with the county.
This is all way complicated.
Yeah, you know, the point that Carrie made that I think is the one that is really to be emphasized is that both on the State Water Project and then the Lopez Project, where you have a bunch of different facilities and State Water is clearly much, much more complicated than Lopez, and then you have a whole bunch of different agencies that are buying into it. Well, when these contracts get developed, everybody is very concerned that it's an equitable deal. So there's a lot of work effort, and it does create, you know, complications in the billing processes. But that's just...
So I may be doing this simplistically, but this means that as we go through this year, we're not going to be taking that much state water. We're going to be using our reserve from Lopez.
Yes, and so that's where I think when we were talking last, when we were previewing the board's action and and talking about, you know, going and speaking there. Yeah, because when we're in the drought, what we were pursuing was maximizing storage, maximizing local storage so that it was accessible. Now that the water situation is better and we still have state water, that right now the strategy is to minimize costs. And the best way to minimize costs is to take as much Lopez water as we can possibly take.
And our opportunity for state water will be sitting in the San Luis Reservoir.
Yeah. Now, if we have a really wet year again, then nothing's going to get stored. It's going to spill. But it also means that the 2018 allocations of state water are going to be good again. Mm-hmm. So when I reflect back upon the strategies over the last couple of years, we stored 2.75 years of Lopez water behind the reservoir, 2.75 years of our 303 acre feet per year allocation. That worked out to, you know, well more than a year of our total demand. And So with the board action yesterday to allow us to use that water for the current water year, there's no way we're going to be able to use all the water that we stored. And at the end of the water year, if we have another rainy season, then in all probability, we might lose some of that water that we stored.
Yeah.
We're also talking to Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach that, you know, maybe we can push some of that water their way, especially if we're just going to lose it so that they don't have to pump as much from the groundwater basin as well. So, and I think that's what, you know, Director Brunet was referring to is in terms of our relationship with the county is one thing, but that's a lot about maximizing our ability to manage our supplies with our neighbors locally. So, you know, I think that with that 2.75 years of storage, that early in the drought, I wouldn't seek to have that much water in storage. But as that drought starts hitting the fourth and fifth year, then having water storage becomes more important than money in the bank. Because, you know, our operating budget is fine. And we know that in order to do our capital improvement program, we're going to have to address finances associated with that. But, you know, we have a stable operating budget, and you get in the fourth or fifth year of a drought, you really have to be thinking about, you know, water more than money. So I think it worked out pretty well. I might think that maybe we could have, maybe we didn't need to store quite as much as we stored, but it's a little bit better to be safe than sorry than when it comes to water. So, you know, these are always constant learning experiences.
Well, and you can't predict Mother Nature.
Yeah.
I mean, is it going to rain in November or December?
Right.
If it doesn't rain this year.
We're not going to get a lot of rain.
And you don't want to predict Mother Nature because she will usually prove you wrong.
Yeah. So, I mean, we still have water. We still have water in the bank, so to speak.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think one of the things with this presentation, too, and a lot of our discussions really have been around this, is, you know, really to commend staff, Oceana, over the past few years, specifically regarding the water, our portfolio, because not only did we set Oceana up, you know, something that I didn't mention from the advisory committee last week is there was a gentleman, I don't remember his name, from Arroyo Grande, who's on the TAC committee. And one thing that he pointed out was, and within the letter that's not here, but did go to the Board of Supervisors, was within the letter to highlight the efforts of agencies. Oceana led the way, I think, in making sure, as President White had noted last year, pumping only one half of 1%, making sure that we, you know, really helped out the other agencies around here, and, you know, our portfolio is one of the best in the counties, if not the best, that we really led the efforts to in conservation and helping other agencies. And I just think that just looks so strongly on our community as well as our staff, our board. So it's a big thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
And I should clarify, perhaps the best portfolio for the size of the agency,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because obviously, City of San Luis has got a huge portfolio of water.
Yes,
for our size. Yes.
But we're still better.
Next, we need purple pipe water.
Yes, and related. Water. So through Zone 3, a company named ECOR has been hired. We had our kickoff meeting with them in order to address things like the LRRP gives us temporary rights to store water during a drought emergency and, well, you know, even some period of time after. But establishing permanent rights for storage. So that got kicked off today, and we had some discussions about how do we regionally coordinate the various supplies. We talked about purple pipe water, reclaimed water a little bit. But ECOR, the consulting group, we said, well, first off, let's focus in on permanent storage rights to Lopez.
That's where it needs to be.
Yep.
Right where we have, where the whole South County has its water. Yeah.
So get public comment, but
public
no actions.
Comment.
I've got a couple of questions. Can I get a list from the general manager of the people that we're selling water to, and how much of each resource we're selling?
The customary protocol for public comment would be for the comments to, in questions to be posed, and then once they're posed and public comment is closed, then we'll provide the best responses that we can.
Okay, so let me put it in terms of a statement. And in addition to my written request for public records, I want a list of everybody we're selling water to from our three sources of water that come out of our tap.
Thank you. Moving on, or do you want to answer?
There are no public records requests that we haven't responded to. Sometimes public records requests ask for something that simply doesn't exist. So, you know, in my tenure, we haven't sold water to other agencies. If the speaker wishes to submit a public records request of the nature that was spoken to, the list is simply all of our water customers. Those are the people who...
I have to correct the general manager.
You know what? Public comment has stopped.
Requests since 2010. Written requests.
Giselle, please.
So, again, we don't sell water to other agencies. We haven't had any out-of-district water transfers. If we did anything new, those require LAFCO approval. We do have had a history. We have customers who are outside of our boundaries and who wheel water through a city of Rio Grande. But if the request for who do we sell water to is made, then it's our customer list. That's the only people who we're selling water to is our customers, and they get billed just like everybody else gets billed. So,
thank you.
We were wheeling water to Apple Beach when John Wallace was still working for us.
Moving on. Item 10, hearing items. We have none. Received written communications.
You know, the only thing that we had was what we handed out on the bid openings.
Future agenda items.
So the one item that we'll add to that list is the future efforts associated with our utility relocations for the Highway 113th Street improvements.
Okay. And then I see basically the only future hearing items would be the budget.
Then on July 26th.
On July 26th, we scheduled the hearing to consider rescinding the district's drought emergency resolution. And on that, I anticipate we would have similar recommendations to what the governor and the county had done, which means, well, it can get rescinded, but we're still going to have some drought response actions that we need to continue.
Very good. Thank you. Any other items? Any other business? Do I hear a motion on item 15, adjournment?
I'll make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
I'll second.
Meeting adjourned.